Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Untalented Podcast. Sean is actually joining us today. We're doing a duo.
I've crashed the party.
Which is quite unique, but...
Speaking of party,
ooh.
It's someone's birthday here today.
Oh,
It is.
That was good.
That was a clean segue.
So whose birthday is it?
It is my birthday. Guys, it's my 30th birthday, and I've chosen to spend time with the wonderful After Hours. Welcome, guys.
Woo!
So we've got Jasmine. Jasmine, do you want to just let people know what your voice is?
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm Jasmine.
Jasmine. We've got Shai. Do you want to let everyone know what your voice
is? This is what my voice sounds like.
Brilliant. So I'm going to kick it off pre-intro. I want to know who the first person was to make you feel talented.
I'm just going in.
Shai.
No, you go. I don't have an answer for this question.
Okay.
But I'm going to spin it, which is kind of weird, but...
That's perfect.
It wasn't about who made me feel talented, but maybe inspired, which is a very wanky answer.
No, this is great.
However, I had like two moments, an art teacher in school, which I feel like every designer is going to say, and then a lecturer at uni, because I was like not good with any kind of form of structured education. I was just like, I hate this. So this one lecturer was like a real hard ass, like to get any reviews or anything, you had to book in a meeting with her for like 15 or 20 minutes. Like
really?
after uni hours. And if you didn't rock up, points down. So that was probably the first person who was like, oh, you could probably do design, and was inspiring.
Love that.
Nice. Great answer.
Mine would be Shai.
No,
because I think that in my whole life, I have never been able to put into a box with kind of what I do. And so Shai was really validating.
Oh, guys, this
and,
is beautiful.
And was really supportive and encouraging. And I think that was the first time I was like, oh, well, maybe I'm good at what I do. And I feel like that's been a common theme, is that Shai's been really supportive.
Wow.
Love that.
That's...
Well, I'll try and do a little intro. I think that... from my perspective, After Hours is a studio that people... a lot of people know or recognize. So I think it's important for everyone to kind of get to know you both. And I think you describe yourself as your favorite studio's favorite studio, right?
That was pre-Chapel. It was a little bit. I'm so sorry.
It was a bit. And we were planning on changing it every couple of months, but we ran out of steam, actually. What was the next one? You had one planned.
Oh, regretfully, not under new management.
Okay.
Is the next.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I love this. Cool. So I guess... That's to my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are a design agency, which is completely nomadic. You have a really vibrant, fun, kind of, I guess, youthful at times style, but it's very eclectic and you don't seem to sort of stay in a specific lane. All of your projects feel quite different. Everything feels kind of new and fun. And I think the thing that makes you totally unique is that you don't have an office. Your office is wherever you travel.
Mm-hmm.
And we can kind of get on to that a little bit later. But have I missed anything? Do you want people to know anything more about you? Like what makes you different, really?
I'm going to go into a spiral. No, I don't know. What do you think? We're trying to work that out at the moment.
Okay,
That's good.
It's a big thing.
It's a big topic. We've also talked to a lot of people. It's a big topic. Everyone's kind of
trending right now.
Town halling.
Like,
over
what's
it?
Our positioning? Mm. Who are we? What do we want? What's the future look like? But I think that sums it up quite nicely. And at the moment, that's definitely our positioning.
Remote studio, always kind of trying new stuff. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like the biggest.
I'd love to know, when was the moment you realized After Hours could become its own thing?
Well, we kind of started by accident.
Yeah.
It wasn't a conscious thought. We're like, oh, yeah, we're going to start a studio, work on stuff. It was so funny. We're looking over our notes from like when we first started. It was like, would like interstate clients, which is kind of so stupid. Any thoughts?
Keep going.
No. Wait, the question was, when did we think it was a moment? I don't know. It's funny because we have this like, we had this thing where in Asana we would set a reminder saying, is After Hours a hobby or is it a career or a job?
Interesting.
So we started by accident. We were just kind of working on stuff together. without...
There was three parts
okay.
to what motivated us to start After Hours, because I thought about this. And I went back through all of our strategies we had at the start and was reading old notes. And there was three main parts. Number one, revenge. Number two was the being put in a box in terms of what we could and couldn't do. And then the third was the dissatisfaction around the industry. So do you want to speak to any of these?
No, you go.
The revenge piece was that we had ended a job, not quite lovely. And so it was around February 2020 or around January, Feb. And we kind of were applying for all these different jobs, didn't hear back. No one wanted us. Independently.
No one wanted us.
And so we kind of were just like, well, why don't we just start After Hours and start something and see what happens? We had no clients, zero clients, no money.
Scary though,
we had, right? Of course. And so to add to that, not only had we lost our jobs, we had actually, we didn't have anywhere to live. So we had no jobs. We had no money. We had nowhere to live. And so like, let's start a studio. So dumb, so naive, so young. But
and then COVID hit.
Oh yeah, so we wanted to start a studio that was focused on the hospitality industry. We really loved restaurants and cafes, and we wanted to create this studio that would service them. And so, like I said, it was February 2020. By March 2020, COVID hit. The country shut down. Restaurants, cafes shut down. So we had no prospective clients, as well as no actual clients. So we. But back to the piece on the bad ending of the other thing, we were like, well, we have to keep going, you know, revenge. Yeah. We have to be more successful than they are. And that was kind of what kept us going in that capacity. So I think we both got some part-time jobs. I worked for a magnesium company while still running After Hours.
Niche.
That was so niche.
Shy. I got Shy a job doing like the most feminine marketing, and Shy is not that at all, doing like EDMs for beauty brands, just 100 EDMs a day. And I was like, yeah, you've got this. You're going so well.
I was like, thanks, babe.
You were pretending to be
pretending to be Jazz, which is ridiculous.
Yes, wow. I had my headshot on their website and I was like, I didn't
No.
Yeah, so I would do the work. So you searched Jasmine. And while you were at the part-time, like the magnesium company. This is so, we're just like,
I'm sweating. And so.
Thanks, babes.
That was. That one, the revenge. And then the second piece was that we also, with the whole boxes thing, my whole life I couldn't be defined as to what my career was. And I felt like I was always changing and moving, and people were kind of like, well, what do you do? Like, what's your job description? I could never answer it, and I still can't. And so...
You're a founder now.
Exactly. You're a founder now. So it was kind of like, well, why don't we have this thing that we can experiment, try new things, do whatever we want in terms of art direction, socials, branding, websites, strategy, and just try everything, see what sticks. And then I don't think we thought After Hours would be a studio.
No, absolutely.
It was kind of just like, we wanted it to be successful, but it was also just like, oh, we'll keep going, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of really helped because we were able to experiment with what we wanted to do.
I think that is super healthy though, because we're in an industry now where everyone is trying to stay in that box. And
interesting.
And just do the thing that the client asked them to do. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like there's much room. This is starting to change, I think, but there's not enough room or space to experiment or conceptualize, especially at the junior level.
Yeah.
Like it's just whatever job you can get in at that
stage. And that's exactly it. And so we were doing strategy courses. We were doing website design courses, website development courses. We were doing everything. Anything we could get our hands on, we were kind of doing just to get the experience because we didn't have the experience. And then I think the third thing was the dissatisfaction with the industry. I didn't even know what the industry was, to be honest. But I think that we just saw a lot of studios and agencies that were super corporate, super boring, and we just wanted to have fun.
Yeah.
Or there was that whole thing, which we still have now. I think things are shifting a little bit where you have to like pay your dues as a junior, which is totally fair. I think that you do need to learn in some
paying your dues.
Or have a mentor or have someone to teach you, but you don't have to pay your dues like to an unpaid internship, work shitty hours, kind of do like the shitty jobs. And there was a lot of that. And maybe I personally felt a bit like, well, I don't want to do that.
We want to just have fun.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, if we were looking back on the strategies that we would do when we first started, it was literally 2020 been like, we just want to have fun. We're not serious people, but we do serious work. And that is still a through theme yeah. that we have today.
I think the revenge thing is interesting because I think lots of businesses need to have some spark to be able to launch something.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, a lot of what we talk about is frustration with the industry we're working
in. Just go to revenge.
Yeah, I don't think I was ever vengeful against anyone. I think I just didn't want to be surrounded by idiots anymore, if I'm completely honest with you.
Yeah.
Shots fired. And
do you have like a boop, 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 boop?
Yeah, exactly. We'll just do some like
some effects.
But I think that you need that driver to get you through some of those difficult times. Because I'm sure at the start you were like, this is probably not gonna work.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. But we knew we had to keep going because we had to beat them.
Mm.
And so
it's game.
We had to beat them.
Yeah, you got and to win.
So we did.
Yeah, you are. You're sitting in New York.
Exactly,
at the moment,
100%. And so I think that the revenge thing died down after maybe like year two or year three. I forgot about them. Yeah. But I think that it was the best motivator at the start.
Love it. Yeah. So I know we've jumped ahead a little bit, but I think it would be good for listeners.
Oh, sorry.
To hear like what part do you both play in After Hours?
Oh, here we go, a box.
That's a roles question.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty like shared roles. I think that's why we like being a studio or a duo or whatever. It's just kind of the day-to-day looks like, which is so intertwined in every aspect of the business, which probably isn't like the most efficient way to run a studio. But
it makes us after
hours. It makes us after hours and it works.
But I would say that you lead probably more of the design. Well, my title's head of everything.
Mm.
And I sometimes think of Shy as my 2IC, so my second in charge.
But sous chef.
Wonderful. That's so good.
But Shy makes me feel talented.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I didn't repay the favor. I was like, nah.
Yeah, no, it's okay. But how would you describe our role differentiation?
Why are you asking me?
Well, you describe yourselves as completely opposite. So
how,
like, there must be, there's a reason that you two are running this business together. How do you complement each other? Where do you feel like when you're in flow, you're like, you know, who's doing what part of the process?
There you go.
We're opposites in terms of everything. The media, we consume. I'm pop culture. You're more alternate indie culture. Our interests are completely different. I'm extroverted. You're introverted. You're really serious. I'm not. even the way that we work, I need complete silence. I need a dark room. You could be working in the middle of a highway and you would be completely fine. And so I think that there's this perspective and approach that we can bring to everything that is just two completely different people. And I would say that you're more the creative. I'm still creative.
But just in a different
way. But I feel like I have more commercial sensibility. Mm. So when we approach projects, there is this commercial meets creative kind of approach.
It's interesting. I feel like sometimes when we talk to people, they're like, oh, it kind of reminds me of like AdWorld where you have a copywriter and a creative.
But I'm not a copywriter.
Not a copywriter, but.
Yeah.
But like that kind of, because people in design don't really get it. They're like, oh, like how do you just have a duo?
Well, we meet people and they're like, oh, you're the project manager when they refer to me. And I'm like, no, actually, I do the websites. I do strategy. I do the design. I'm also on social media.
But it's kind of just this like big mess where we know how to.
Yeah.
But if a project comes in, I would say that I'm leading more strategy with you supporting.
Yeah.
Then we'll hand the reins over for Viz ID. Like for the visual side, Shy will lead and I'll support.
But it's a constant kind of conversation because I don't like not being involved in strategy and you don't like not being involved in design.
Yeah.
That's like a really nice.
I guess two minds are better than one often.
Well, I always wondered that, the traditional creative team, but no such thing in design. It's quite alien.
We've tried to pitch it to clients and figure out how it could work. I think it's, I think the thing with design is you're playing quite similar roles. I mean, if you're a strategist, yes, obviously you're playing a different role to a designer.
Yeah.
But if you're two designers, you're playing quite similar roles, I think, in that process. Whereas in advertising, like a copywriter and art director, they're doing very different things, you know, in terms of like the day to day.
I wouldn't call myself a designer though, which
is you've got no role.
I've got no role.
Head of everything.
But I think that isn't that a brilliant thing that you don't really fit in a box, but you're running your own business doing this type of work.
That's kind of the beauty of running your own studio and why I think it's the best thing in the whole world, because it's you get to wake up every day and be like, well, today, do I want to be analytical? Do I want to be creative? Mm. Do I want to be admin? And you kind of get to choose what you feel that day.
Yeah, totally. I love that. And I think there's a reason that you launched this together. Obviously, like external factors and the revenge. And all of that stuff. But you clearly have sort of catapulted together because it's working. You complement each other and you're doing, you know, like
keep going.
Good work. I would say.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Wow.
I guess we didn't really get into like, so are you more the analytical mind, Jasmine? Like,
I think you'd have to go back to the career journey to understand where we started, but I might palm off to Shai because I feel like I'm hearing my voice a lot. And I think you need to, why don't you start about how you started and how you got into the industry? And then I can talk to how I got into the industry.
Is that a question?
Yeah. Love
okay.
That.
Oh, I felt like mine was pretty like traditional. I didn't really like love school or university. Was creative, but not necessarily very good at a specific thing. I was just like, could pick this up, could do art, could do music, whatever, but just like didn't really find something that I could niche down in, which is interesting because we're talking about niching down anyway. Mm. I enrolled in design college, just couldn't be bothered to go to classes. Like I did, and I was like, this is lame. Just disinterested. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to become a music producer.
Okay, nice.
This is it.
Which is the... So I was like literally a DJ.
Cool.
My parents fucking obviously loved me.
Are we allowed to swear?
Are we allowed to swear?
Oh, swear as much as you want.
And yeah, I mean, now Shai's responsible for curating our playlist.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed.
So that's another role in the equation in the business.
Yes, otherwise you'd end up with Taylor Swift.
In-house
it's
DJ.
It's just sometimes. It's sometimes.
Sometimes all the time.
Yeah. It's either Taylor Swift or silence by the sounds of it.
Or whale noises. Like,
whale noises go down a tree.
Okay.
But anyway, this isn't about me.
That is niche. So silence, Taylor Swift, or whales.
Oh, yeah. We'll hand it back over to Shai.
Yeah, perfect. I think we should.
Yeah, so decided, I'm going to DJ, was doing that, trying to do music production. And I realized when I was doing that, I was probably spending more of the time doing posters and like actually creating these like brands for other people. So I was like, okay, no, enroll in another design college, do that, stick it out. Still didn't like it, but I did it. And then i ended up in a traditional, not traditional design role, but just design role while I was still at uni. Met Jazz there. And then...
What do you think you didn't like about it, Shai? Because I reckon a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are design curriculums and, you know, the structure and this is what we do and we do part one, part two, part three, which just feels very non-creative.
Yeah.
Like, what did you dislike about it? Was it the structure? Was it something else?
Interesting. I think, like, design can be super subjective. And often when you're being taught or your work is being critiqued by maybe a person who doesn't represent the industry at large and you see that, you're like, wow, what is your input here? You're not necessarily the audience. You're not necessarily in the industry anymore. Mm. Maybe you are. I don't know. So I just had a problem with authority.
I think you're bang on.
Yeah. But I was like, what? So you're saying this doesn't make sense?
Yeah.
Why doesn't it make sense?
Yeah. Wow, that like one person can make that decision.
Yeah.
And then completely deter you from your future.
Yeah. So I was like,
no. I agree. You're designing for the person who's marking your work, which is the smallest percentile in that thing. Like it's I know that feeling because when I studied industrial design, you were, based on your different projects, you were finding out who the marker was.
Yeah.
And you were designing for that person. You weren't designing for what you think was the best solution, which is why this thing is broken, because you have so many students just trying to get the mark at the end of the year or to pass, and that's not based on the thing. And you don't get your own style out of that.
No.
You know?
I think also design as a discipline as a if you choose to go into a design role, there is a hell of a lot of like practical, almost clinical training that you have to go through in order to work in a branding agency or work in an advertising agency, which means that you kind of get really carbon copy versions of the same person, really, who've had the same training. In advertising, I think there's a far wider funnel to get into that space. You know, you can come in from a writing standpoint, you come in from a design standpoint, you're coming from an art directional standpoint. So it means that I think people are much different, more, you know, there's a lot more variety. Whereas like you can't just go and get a design job as someone who's not been anywhere near design before. So it's quite interesting. And also from a taste perspective, you know, people want to see what they want to see from like a head of design might not have actually, you know, touched a laptop for like 10 years. You know, so that's like, that's challenging as well. Mm. Anyway, I've just completely interjected there.
With you both being so similar in a lot of ways, but also so different, how do you align on a decision? Like if you feel very differently about something, how do you move forward? Is there like a criteria that you're like, let's go back to the three P's of blah, blah, blah? Or is there
it's
who can shout the loudest?
Who can shout the loudest?
No, I think whoever has the strongest argument.
Yeah.
And the strongest reasoning as to why that's the best decision. I mean, there is a million fights before it goes to a client. A million throwdowns.
No, we don't have like necessary like internal rounds. It's not structured feedback.
Yeah. At least that is.
No, it's just kind of you walk over and like, that shit, move on.
No. Shy.
It's interesting though, isn't it? I think you've got to be so comfortable with each other to be able to get to those decisions.
Yeah.
And there's no filter.
Which is great, right?
So it's just, as to Shai's point, it's kind of like, that's not working. Change that. That needs to move. That needs to be different.
And you should be able to like jump back yourself up if you actually believe it's a good idea. And if you're like, that's a bad idea, you're like, and you back down, of course it's a bad idea. You have no justification. But like, I don't know, it's different. Like your background was
different.
So we can come to the table with like different, I don't know, answers. If that makes sense.
I think the friction is important though.
Yeah.
Because as you say, It shouldn't be the loudest voice in the room that sells the idea or wins the argument. But you should be able to fight for your ideas. And if, as you say, if you don't...
Take it outside.
if you can't, then you don't feel passionately enough about it.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people listening to this will probably have thought about starting their own agency. Mm. And lots of people are probably planning to at some point in their career. I guess... For you guys, how did the success come? Like, obviously, or when did you finally realize that it was going to be, you could do it? Like, because I'm sure a lot of people can, you know, they can freelance and they can do their thing. But what was the moment for you where you're like, okay, we can actually, this is a thing. We're doing this. It's actually working.
I think I'm going to go back and I'm going to say how I got to it, because I think that kind of informs that as well.
Yeah.
So my path into design was not linear, and I didn't grow up wanting to be in design or anything. Like, I didn't want to be a DJ, or I didn't code my MySpaces like every other designer.
Yeah.
I actually went to university wanting to be a paramedic, but then changed and went to teaching and then realized I hated kids. And so then I went into journalism. So I have a Bachelor of Journalism because I wanted to be a war journalist.
Wow.
Yeah.
You really flicked around.
And then I went into marketing.
Okay.
From that. And then I was doing marketing and PR for about 7 years. And that was in fashion. That was in e-commerce. And then I kind of just one day, I was jumping around from different jobs, different cities. And then one day I saw on my stories, a friend was doing Shillington, which is that short design course. And this was in 2019. So it's still relatively recent. I woke up one day and I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. So I quit my job and I took out a $20,000 bank loan and I went and did Shillington. Wow. And I ended up getting a job. So I moved to a different city, did Shillington. And in that city, I got a job where Shai was.
Yeah.
So I hadn't really been in the design industry for very long before we actually started After Hours.
Wow.
Would you recommend it? Because there's a lot of like difference in thought around Shillington. Because I think some people are quite like, you don't get enough training in design to be a...
It is the biggest waste of money. Okay. It's so stupid. And that's my personal experience. I think that nobody in my cohort went and did design now. Like no one was set up with what they needed to do to have success. And I think they have a lot of amazing case studies. And there are a lot of people who were successful, but I don't know if maybe that was because they were in New York, they were in London, and they had the right people who they could connect with. But where I was in Australia, it wasn't a good introduction into the industry.
Yeah.
It was just like, you can't learn what you need to know in 3 months. And it was full time. And I was still trying to work full time on top of that. It was not the best way to be introduced into design. And I think that you would benefit more from a longer course than 3 months. You can
also just like teach yourself the skills.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah. So like, let's say it's back to 2019, 2018, you could do it again. Mm-hmm. What would you change?
I mean, it did get me into the industry. Mm. I had no idea what design was before I kind of did it, other than watching people do it in these big fashion places that I was, being like, oh, what's that? I like that. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like they didn't set you up for success. So you weren't connected with the right people who could help you get jobs. And even when I went and got a job, it was still in the marketing realm, but in a design firm.
Yeah.
So it kind of wasn't in design. Yeah. It was like a sidestep into design.
Yeah. It is interesting, isn't it? Because even in like, there's different like tiers, isn't there? I think to what design could be, you know, and, you know, you're kind of going through the art working lens there, aren't you, going into like a marketing department rather than it being really conceptually focused, like proper like graphic design.
Yeah.
Back to the kind of how, when did you feel like it kind of was a thing? We spoke before about kind of white labeling and you having the opportunity to do some work from inside enemy lines. You said a really nice thing around how you weren't getting considered. We can cut this out if I can't say this. You weren't getting considered for the right for jobs in these places, and then you ended up working with these businesses through After Hours. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really cool story for like, how did that happen? Like, what, talk us through that process. How did you eventually find yourself working for a big agency doing work inside that agency?
I think it's interesting. I saw someone else make this. I don't know if it was like on It's Nice Out or something, but they were essentially a freelancer or a designer who said that starting your own practice or building a profile around being an independent was kind of the cheat code in the industry. Because if you're just kind of like a number in the amount of graduates that graduate each year from around the world, you've all been through the same coursework, all the portfolios, people know, you get the portfolios and you're answering the same brief kind of thing. Like, how do you stand out? Whatever. Creating your own kind of like profile or presence almost feels like the cheat code, because studios, one, you either become competition, or two, you're like, you stand out because there's eyes on you, right?
But when we first started, we started as a studio, but then we actually transitioned to a duo.
So it's a constant, and we practice a studio, a duo.
But we went to a duo because we did want to be less threatening and be able to have these opportunities where we could jump into an agency.
Yeah, but essentially we kind of got like approached by a bunch of studios. They're like, oh, would you ever come on board and work with us?
I think our first one was an agency called Joseph Mark, who we would still sometimes work with today.
We're chatting about Alex. Yeah, Alex is great. Shout out to Alex. Alex might not amazing. ever listen to this, but
we'll send it to her so she
can. Yeah. She was like, oh, do you want to work on this project with us? And she was really great because, I don't know, you just like slot straight in as a team. You're kind of like, here's the team, this is like how we work. We're Let's just Slack. Like, just go for it. And it was really great in that capacity, white labeling. But she allowed us to kind of credit the work, which is awesome. But in some instances with white labeling, you don't necessarily get that.
There's a lot of pros and cons to white labeling. Yeah. And so after we transitioned from not being a studio into being more of a duo, we did it a lot more. And it was amazing, like you said, to get behind enemy lines, but to see how a big agency runs or a studio runs, to understand how a team works, the different processes, or even the client management tools and things, because
tech stacks,
we had no idea. Yeah. Even learning what the latest tools are that people are using, it's so insightful. Because as a studio of you know, tour, we don't necessarily have the latest and the greatest and what's
relevant. Well, you're not being pushed by the team at large to go upskill, right? You have to do it all yourself. And so slotting in and kind of learning through them is really awesome. And then you also get resources like if you're working with a creative director that you really like, they end up being either your friends, your peers, your mentors. So you get that as well, which is awesome.
Would you recommend it that as a thing to do for a duo starting out?
I think that it made us so much more confident in what we were doing, because if we could have some incredible studios either want to work with us or we have worked with, it kind of made it feel like we were validated and that we had made it, quote unquote. It was, I think that because we didn't have the right experience, it made us be like, oh, we're doing the right things. Yeah. This imposter syndrome is so massive. But if you can jump into all these different studios and be like, oh, everyone's kind of doing the same thing, and now we're doing that too, it makes us feel like we are legit-y.
Yeah.
It's like peer testing, isn't it, I guess, to an extent. Like people are like viewing you as someone who they want to bring into their agency to do it. You've clearly got a unique style or voice or strategy or something that's adding to that project. So, yeah, I mean, definitely it should boost. It clearly did boost that confidence to that stage. When does it become not a good thing to do?
I was going to say the cons are like you have to kind of sit down and weigh them out yourself.
But I would still say back to the pros, one last thing. We didn't realize that we really wanted to do a duo until there was a studio that works with an e-commerce development studio called Baggy. And Jill and Quentin there are just amazing people, but they introduced us to all these different studios. So we kind of were able to get in front of the right people and get the roles.
But we didn't even know that like white labeling was really a thing.
We didn't know it was a thing.
Also, if anyone has no idea what white labeling is, just in case
anyone
doesn't, do you want to explain what it is?
No, you do. You want to explain it clearly.
I'll do it. Essentially, it's when a large agency will bring in a smaller agency, like you guys as a creative duo, and like After Hours will do a project from within that other agency, but often not be credited with doing the work.
Which is amazing financially because you can forecast a little bit more in terms of workflow and what's coming in. And yes.
I mean, I think it's interesting because you can approach everything with like a binary lens, like there's pros, there's cons, but there's also this other part where we'll go into the cons. But there needs to be like transparency around how a lot of studios run. We know large studios who still white label, whether they do like a specific thing that another agency has sold to a project and they don't know how to do it. So they'll bring in whether that's a development agency or art direction or whatever. And it's a good amount of cash flow for that studio to stay afloat or be able to pay their bills for a period of time. So I think that's like, I don't know, cons are you spend months on building something for someone else. And then you have like this gap in your portfolio or studio's work where we're just like, oh, from March till July, we were doing absolutely nothing. And they're like, why was there a gap there? And you're like, oh, well.
I think it's more like to your point, no one's asking why there was a gap, but you don't have anything to talk about.
Yeah.
And you're only as good as your last project.
Yeah.
And so if your last project was a few months ago.
And then you can get into the whole like, oh, I burnt myself out because I was working on this thing for someone else. Whereas like you've only got your biggest resources, your own time and creativity, right?
Mm. Yeah. I think also a big thing for you guys, because you have such a big social profile.
Yeah.
For an agency of two, you've got a massive following. and
revenge.
revenge.
We just refresh it. We will overtake them one day.
Yeah. But I think that's a big downside of white labeling is you don't get the social status that you deserve because nobody knows you've done that thing.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about how you guys have, because I think you've done a really unique thing of, when I introduced you both, lots of people know who you are and maybe don't know all of the work you've done or who you are. You've got such a big, they do know who you are because your social presence is so good. How was that? Did you mean to do that? Was that like was it a strategic choice to be really like big on social? Like how, because you have a massive following for the size that you are.
No, and I was literally going to add to that point. We see so many studios who aren't shouting enough about the work they're doing. So yeah, sorry, that was just random.
Random. No, sure, it was really good. I think that, and for socials, and when we say that, we are bigger on Instagram, and we're not that big, but we are bigger on Instagram than we are on, let's say, LinkedIn or TikTok or anything. which we would, I mean, we tried to dabble on LinkedIn, but the tone of voice isn't quite translating.
It's kind of funny though.
On Instagram, we just want to have fun and show kind of behind the scenes what's happening. We feel like everyone is using Instagram as an announcement board rather than having a two-way dialogue or a conversation. And so it just feels so boring to look at other studios' pages.
It's just like work, right? You're like,
And so we kind of didn't want that. We always wanted to be a little bit more fun, playful. And it was strategic. I mean, my background was also a social media manager. And so it was bringing that in. And I don't know, we've just managed to keep it up.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's scary though. It's kind of like, oh, like, are we being too much? Do we need to tone it back? Are we being too funny? And that's kind of like a question that we have. But
yeah, it kind of was strategic to be.
But we still have leads come through Instagram, whether it's
interesting.
We get from all of our we'll get to that.
Yeah.
We have all of our inquiries come through Instagram mostly, whether it's a brand manager or like a in-house CD that's seen our work and wants to work with us, whether it's founders directly reaching out. Cool. Going through like similar accounts and then coming across our work. But I think that what we post and especially in our stories is a reflection of the experience that you'll have when you work with us.
Also, like, most people are on social media and the whole game of social media is just to be relevant, right? If you're staying top of mind, you're always there.
Yeah.
And it's a two-way conversation. People feel like they're getting something out of it too. They know who we are. Like, people...
But it's also your...
I don't know.
If you're able to use the platforms, it's kind of like you're showing your clients that you know how to use these platforms too. And it's also showing our personal brand. Like, we're telling clients that we're building their brand, but what's After Hours brand? And so it's a great way to show that we aren't just, you know, we have our own personality.
Yeah.
I think it puts you in a really unique position in the industry, because I assume and the type of client that you want to win is one that appreciates how you present yourself on social media. What you don't want, and I might be wrong, what you don't want is like a big corporate, boring,
horrible,
like dusty old business that doesn't. And what you do is that you clearly are not for those people.
Yeah,
through your socials.
And that's okay.
And that's great. You've got to pick your lane. And I think actually it's really smart how you conduct yourself on socials, because people know you before they meet you and know you.
We get, if someone refers someone onto us and they haven't looked at our socials, I already know that they're probably not going
to. It's kind of like a dating profile in a way.
Well, because they don't really understand us. But then if they've come through Instagram, they looked at the stories like, oh wow, like these are, you know, their personalities, who they are, they're kind of like, oh, that's what drew us in. We really liked how authentic you were on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But to speak on TikTok, to Shai's point before, we're not on TikTok and it's something I'd love to get into. But it's not as natural, I think, being a little bit older than Gen Z, where I feel like they can do a lot of camera-facing things.
Well, look at you now.
I know. We're on camera.
Yeah, it's still TikTok.
But someone did a review of a website we did, and the review was fine, but we've gotten so many new inquiries from the review.
Really?
Yeah,
people are like, oh, I saw you on TikTok. So I've had to add TikTok as an option in my inquiry form to be like, how did you find out about us? Because everyone was just saying TikTok.
Yeah. I think it's so, like, it's fascinating, because I think this is like the future of design, creativity, new business. Like, this is, we're already there. It's not even the future. This is like the present.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the biggest pain points that Sean and I hear from agencies is like, how do we win the sort of client that we want? You know, how do we win that client that is someone we want to work with? And I think that new business kind of process is so old school. It's who you know. It's getting yourself in the right rooms. It's, you know, quite an elitist kind of process. And you're completely flipping that on its head, because you're getting clients come to you. And I think the sort of clients that you want.
Yeah. But there's a real art to that social media presence on Instagram, because what you're doing very intelligently is like weaving yourselves into people's daily life, right? Like that's the thing that people are spending all their time on out of work.
Yeah.
And the difference with something like a LinkedIn is it's the complete opposite. You know, where they're seeing work there is during their work day.
Wow, that's smart.
So I actually like...
Do you check LinkedIn like after hours?
Oh yeah, it's never off. It's in my bottom navigation.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not, I promise. Yeah. But it's that's difficult though, because there are so many agencies and brands who it all feels disconnected in their tone of voice when it comes to LinkedIn and their Instagram and then their website. And so it's a real challenge. But if you get it right, I mean, you've proven.
I do think any founder, I've said this before, any founder that runs, who has a design agency, should be running their own socials, because I think it's a really good way also to be tapped into what's happening culturally, what's happening in the industry. And the best socials are founded, I'm talking about smaller shops, not larger agencies, like probably, you know, small to medium businesses. We have met so many other studios purely because of the dialogues that we're having in the DMs.
Yeah.
And all of our favorite studios are run by the, the favorite accounts are run by the founders.
Yeah.
I think it gets a bit soulless, doesn't it, when it's like not, you can tell it's not a human being or not one person.
Mm.
It's just like a spokesperson for this.
The announcement agency. Board. Or it's like always like, the junior will do it. Or palm it off. But it's, I don't know, it's just so
Which is kind of crazy because it's a sales channel and you're just palming it off.
Yeah.
Like, people don't see it as that though. Genuinely, like, I speak to loads of founders of probably like one step bigger than you guys maybe, or sort of 25, plus 25 people.
Yeah.
And they hate the social thing. They're like, we don't see the value in it because that's not how we win our business.
But also culture though. Like, what about the staff you want to attract?
Yeah, it's so good for talent.
Oh, and that, but that's why you are totally different to that type of business or that type of person.
But I am scared. What happens if we get older and then we're not as relevant and we don't know how to use it?
You can go back to LinkedIn.
You're going to be like,
we don't know how to use the channels.
You're going to be like everyone's mum on Facebook.
Oh, perfect.
You're going to be like that. You know,
maybe we should start a Facebook group.
Maybe that's the future.
Yeah.
I think that Facebook's having a resurgence.
Do you think?
Well, I don't know. I think I read it once.
I hope not.
You're the creatives. You should know this. I want to talk about nomadic lifestyle.
Oh, yeah.
How long do we have left? Is it literally 2 minutes?
15?
The time is, when we started one?
I think we'll sort of, we started about 7 past, I think. But do we have a little bit more?
You started 7 past, we started 2 or 7.
Great, perfect.
Wow. Oh, thank God.
Let's keep that in as well, because that was fun.
Yeah, that's a nice cutaway for
The nomadic lifestyle thing. That is, I think, a thing that a lot of people want. I think a lot of people think they want as well. I think it can go really right or really wrong.
Yeah, for sure.
I'd love to know from you two, first of all, why?
Yeah.
Like, why do it? Why travel the world? Why, although it probably seems obvious.
Why?
and what are the benefits? What's the blockers sometimes?
I guess we kind of like, you can tell we're pretty unconventional. We hate the large, the old agency model. We kind of were like, you know what? Let's do the most dumbest unconventional thing ever. Not consciously, but let's just do it. For us, I think we just kind of wanted to, if we're branding for a world, why not immerse yourself in the world and go, like, how can you get insights?
New perspectives.
You go.
Oh, no, moving around. No, I'm talking so much. You go.
No, I was just going to say, how can you get new insights or in brand specifically? We're always like, oh, you know, you have to see things from a new perspective. We have to try something different, spontaneity, all that. How can you do that if you're like taking the same route to work every day?
That's so true.
Seeing nothing new. There is no kind of like moments for.
It's kind of you always in autopilot. So it's breaking that.
Yeah. So for us, we're like, you know what? Let's challenge ourselves. Challenge by traveling. It's not really like a challenge. Yeah.
But we kind of just move around. How we do it is that we move around and we kind of plan maybe 2 to 3 months in advance. I mean, we've been away for 7 months now from Australia. We don't actually have a fixed address. So we don't have a place in Australia to go back to. We just sublet an Airbnb our way around the world.
Wow.
And it kind of... like we were saying before, new perspectives, new ways of thinking. We're getting inspiration from all these different places. We're meeting all these new people. And it just feels like we're never bored and that we can always bring innovative, creative solutions to our work. That's not just sitting online and looking at the same boards on Arena or Pinterest, because we are actually in the real world getting inspiration.
Tell us the bad things then. What isn't it good for?
Sometimes I feel like we have no time, and I know that everyone says you don't have time, but you don't have time to do all these extracurricular things that we want to do for the studio, because it feels like we're always kind of planning where to go next. That'd be my downside.
I think also you don't get to, like, you have lots of friends and you get to know people in the industry or even just prospective clients or whatever, but they're very fleeting kind of friendships. You don't necessarily get to sink into a city and really absorb like someone who's maybe grown up in New York for XYZ or stayed here for a long period of time. They might pick up a client or so or work on like a hometown hero project. That's kind of cool. We don't necessarily get that because you're just kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
That's the downsides.
Do you find that it, because obviously you guys spend all your time together, right?
Yeah.
And is that taxing? Do you feel like you ever need, like, we need to do a week away from each other?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I wouldn't say it's a week, but therapy, what we do, the way that coming. We work,
yeah,
wow.
Guys, tell us all you want.
Is we always, no matter what city we're in, we find a co-working space. So we'll never be in the same kind of room in a co-working
space. We work
space.
On different floors.
Or different rooms.
Completely. Or every co-working spot here, yeah.
So we can't see each other when we work. That's rule number one.
Wow.
Because I think we're too quick to temper. And so we...
Me?
No, me. But we... I think then it also makes us think about what we're doing, what we're saying.
Yeah.
But means that we can still, like, focus.
Mm. But yeah, you do get sick of each other.
I think I love the sound of it. Knowing how I am, though, I am quite a routine-y kind of guy.
Yeah. You still have to do... So we do have to have a routine. So it's picking up your life and putting in a new city. And we're in each city for around 2 months at a time.
Yeah.
Or to 3 months. I mean, we've been in New York for three. But it's still got to have gym. Still have to have the co-working space. Still have to... You still have Monday to Friday as like your regular routine. Mm. And then on the weekends, you can go out and do the experience and the fun thing. So it's kind of just like having mini weekends.
Yeah, that's a nice way to see it. I can imagine a lot of people could just get carried away and quite lost in like...
Wow.
Yeah. Whoa. Whoa, time to get deep.
Yeah.
I would just like... I feel like I've got better at that, but I was bad at that, where I'd walk outside in a new city and be like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This isn't the Strand, or this isn't, you know...
I think we have... over the last, I don't know, 12 to 18 months, traveled quite a lot, which at the start, it's like, whoa, this is weird and different and all new experiences. But I think you just get used to being a little bit out of your comfort zone.
Clients love it as well.
Yeah,
so when clients first come in, we'll jump on a call and we'll run them through like a deck about us. And one of the pages in there is about how we travel and how it's all about these new perspectives, innovative approach and everything. And really explain why and what it is that we do, just so that they're fully aware that we will be operating in different time zones.
Yeah.
And they all have been extremely receptive. And we also have client portals. And in the client portal is a link to our After Hours on Tour page, where we have every date that we're away, where we are. So it's super clear. Because at the start, the first year we started doing it, we just left overseas and didn't tell anyone, and that
I was like, what?
That was not the right thing to do.
No, I think it's like interesting because you have to have the structure set up for you to be able to do it, to work remotely, and some teams can do it, some teams don't. Like, it really depends. And because we kind of didn't have, we just created this thing, we could do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah, really. For sure. I mean, I think to summarize this, the main thing I'm getting from this nomadic lifestyle is it allows you to be as creative as you can. You're exposed to all these new things all of the time. Mm-hmm. And really, that's what the industry is fueled on, you know, is creative ideas and innovation and new experiences, and new perspectives. So I think it's great. I think a lot of smaller studios could think about adopting something like this. I understand how it might not work in a bigger place.
Yeah, of course.
But an option too.
Yeah. Great reason to start your own studio.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think also if you are any perspective clients listening to this, you want to connect with an agency who is making you be more creatively inspired, right? They connect with you guys because they want your creative minds. And if this nomadic lifestyle is allowing you to be at your max capacity of creativity, then why else, well, how could there be any negatives to it? I guess the scale aspect is going to be difficult for you guys when you grow. We were laughing when we spoke last week about bringing a whole agency of people with you, which would be hilarious.
Just like hire a tour van.
That
would be toxic.
I think that's why it's kind of like we don't really have a strong future plan for After Hours, in terms of we love doing what we're doing now, but I don't want to speak for myself in 2 years or 3 years. It kind of, we started just wanting to do hospitality, but that changed. Like, we're always evolving as people.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's kind of where we're at right now. So maybe we don't want to scale right now. We love being small. We love working on every single project. A client comes in, they're with us from start to finish. We're hands-on and we adore that.
Yeah.
So I think that we're not ready to kind of give that up.
Yeah, but why should you? You just got to be clear on what you want to do right now.
Yeah.
And I think the industry is so obsessed with growth and selling the business and, you know, all of this stuff is so jargon-based. It's important, you know, people need to grow and people want to grow and all of that stuff. But you just got to pick your lane and do what you like doing. You started this because you wanted to. So like, that's epic. It's nice to hear people who are just sure about what they're doing right now. Like, it's cool. I'm going to have to finish in 1 second, but I'm going to ask you before we finish, have you ever seen Room 101? Do you know what that is? You bring something that you want to eradicate from the earth.
What?
Yes. What? So my example, you're going to have to think of your feet here. My example is world food buffets. So
Hey.
Whoa.
Don't hate on
that. So you don't want to have like spaghetti and like chow mein.
Yes, and sushi and then a bit of curry.
Pizza. Mm-hmm. Pizza
so,
always.
Like, I don't think they should exist anymore. Hence. So we're going to walk out of the room today and they're out of the world.
Okay.
Have you got anything you feel specifically unpassionate about, or more than unpassionate, you detest it?
I was going to say sambas, but
literally brilliant. Just brilliant. So also, all the listeners, brilliant. The shoe that Woody has on,
one that's on my feet, Shy
wants
right
to get
now.
Rid of.
I'm just gonna put
ankle socks, like, oh no, like the ones that are no, okay, that's fine, right. You know, the ones that are like
you just like trying trainer to socks. Neither of us got on. Mine are what are you wearing, cardigans?
I don't mind this. It's like a felt,
it's a cropped, it's not, cardigan, yeah,
that's it's
see
anyway guys, thank you so much for coming on. Before we get into an argument, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I've been looking forward to this all week and it's the best way to spend my 30th birthday.
Wow.
Great to have you on, guys.
Thank you.
Okay.
And scene.
Oh.
Nice.
We're done. Thanks,
man.
Thank you
was
very much.
Okay?
You guys were epic.
That felt it. Like that went too quickly.
It actually did.
That was like, wow.